Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. And it's a beautiful early spring day here in Clearwater, Florida on Tuesday, February 4th, 2014. And I'm feeling really good today. And the reason I'm feeling really good today is last week I had a guest, Dr. Kellyanne Petrucci, and we talked about, well, I guess it's been almost two weeks now, 10 days, about 10, 11, 12 days. We had a show about doing her program, the 30-day reset, and removing dietary toxins from your body. And I decided that I was going to do that program, and I've been blogging about it on my website. You can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com, and at the top, there's a button that says food on the navigation bar. Click on that, and you can read about how I've been doing on this program since the beginning, what I've been eating, recipes, etc. But the point here is that usually on the show we talk about toxic chemicals, industrial chemicals, heavy metals, solvents, things like that. And what this program is about removing the toxic residues in your body from toxic foods. And these are everyday foods that you think are okay, but they actually are causing problems in your body. And I always thought that I could eat any food that I wanted to eat, and as long as it didn't have toxic chemicals in them. Well, boy, was I wrong, because there are some foods I think probably nobody should be eating. And so I'm not eating those foods, and I haven't been eating them for almost 2 weeks. And this morning I woke up, and it's like, you know, you go through any program and there's, you know, little things along the way. But this morning I woke up and it was like, wow, I really get it. She said, if you can just get through the first 2 weeks, you'll see a big change. And I'm seeing the big change this morning. And we're going to have Dr. Petrucci on again, Dr. Kellyanne, in 2 weeks from Thursday. And we're going to be talking about the whole program and what happened. But I just wanted to just give you this little... I'm just feeling so good today, and my fingers are typing fast, and I have lots of energy, and I'm very happy, and I feel a relief of not having some toxic stuff in my body that was there before. And you know, there's different ways that you can remove toxic things from your body, but there are specific ways for different things, and I'm finally doing one that I hadn't done before. It's great, 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 great. I encourage you to go read this. I'm doing really well. That said, we're going to talk about something entirely different today. We're going to talk about indoor air pollution, which we haven't really talked about much as a general topic. But my guest today is Mark Sneller, PhD. He's the author of a book called Greener, Cleaner Indoor Air, A Guide to Healthier Living. And this book was 20 years in the making, and his book is considered to be the most complete and readable guide on indoor air quality for the average consumer. And I would agree with that, because I've read a lot about indoor air quality, but most of the books are written in a very technical way, and this book is very easy to read. Now, he's had his own air quality company called Aero, A-E-R-O, Allergen Research in Tucson, Arizona, since 1979. So he's been doing a lot of research, working with a lot of clients right there in people's homes and buildings, wherever. He was the recipient of the Clean Air Government Award from the Arizona Lung Association twice. And he's got a whole list of credentials that is just like very long. And anyway, he's done a lot of stuff. He's even had his own radio show. He had a weekly newspaper column on air quality for 15 years. So he knows a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot. And we're going to talk about indoor air quality. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Deborah. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Yeah,
thank you. You're somebody that I followed and admired for many years, and to be interviewed by you is really a high point in my career.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for this.
You're welcome. So tell us, give us a story about how you got interested in indoor air quality, of all things.
Oh, man. I originally started out in cancer research and antibiotic research and combination drug therapy and mycology, so the study of fungi and moles. And the end of the story is that I'm a mold expert. But in there is a whole bunch of other stuff. And so I morphed from that into university teaching at San Jose State College for a couple of years and found out that I was an academician and not a politician, and resigned that after 2 years and moved out to Tucson in 79. While I was at San Jose, though, I had hooked up with an allergist who wanted a professional to monitor the homes of his clients and find out what kind of mold they were allergic to or exposed to, so he could prepare antigens suitable to the individual. So I had that experience for a couple of years. That was quite intense, along with the teaching. And when I came out, I decided to expand my own, develop my business and expand it, not just to cover mold, but to cover indoor air quality. And the more I researched it, the more I found that the less that we know, that there's no real spokesperson for the homeowner. There, it's just a seller's market. There's no protection for the homeowner, and the things that we're exposed to on a daily basis that change our moods, our attitudes, our health, you know, it's pretty well recognized that we get 10 times more cancer exposure indoors than outdoors. Yes. Even the federal government, if you can imagine, actually recognizes that now. And that's because of a lot of different factors. And it's a combination of factors. It's sort of like the cup runneth over. You have some allergies, and then you have exposure to fragrances and perfumes, which the EPA and FDA say should be on the hazardous waste list, along with heavy metals and pesticides. And we're exposed to those in terms of perfumes and fragrances. And then we've got diesel exhaust, carbon, and inhalation. And then, it's quite a list. And then we've got allergies to pets. And then, of course, as you had mentioned, the things that we eat. And then we've got climate changes. So I address all of these things in the book. And so things just developed through the years, and the business grew. I was hired by the county health department in 85 to start a pollen and mold monitoring program, where every day I would monitor several areas of the city to ascertain their level of pollen and mold. And then the press got a hold of that, so we had great exposure. 500,000 people to 1 million people a day were able to get the information. And there would be forecasts and predictions. And then I got hired by other cities to help them with a pollen control program, Las Vegas for one, Boulder, Colorado, El Paso, Fresno, like that. So then they dropped the program in 2000, and then I hit the ground running, and then my business expanded, and then on and on. Then I put together, and in there somewhere I was teaching martial arts for the Japan Karate Association when I first moved out to Tucson to make ends meet while I worked my way into the scientific community. And then I wrote the column for the newspaper, as you had mentioned, and then put that together and updated everything and put it together into the book. And since the book is, it was...
Oh, that's why it's a whole bunch of little chapters.
Yeah. I think there's 116 chapters and 14 sections. At one point,
but
it was...
Yeah, it's great. It's great. No, I understand that, because I do that with books, too. Like, if I want to research something, if I want to figure out some new area of where there's toxic chemicals, I start writing about it on my website, and then I put it all together after I figure it out in little pieces. So I do the same thing. It's like making a quilt or something.
Yeah, you have to stay organized, too, to see what you've covered and learn new things. And there are always new discoveries coming out that... I mean, you know, I'm a microscopist, and I have
a microscopist?
A person who's an expert at using the microscope. And so I have several of them, and I'm always puzzled by new things. I mean, I can identify maybe 50 different types of particles in addition to pollen and mold identification. But, there's one particle took me 20 years to learn how to identify.
Wow.
Until I finally figured out what it was. So, you know, not everything is cut and dried. You don't really know what you're looking at. And there's a lot of questions about what you're seeing. And they're yelling at you, say, here I am. Don't you know what I am? And you're saying, no, I don't. And you're trying to figure that out, too.
Well, we need to go to break. So when we come back, we'll talk about what some of these pollutants are. And as we go through the show, I want to learn about what to do to reduce indoor air pollution.
Sounds
this is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And my guest today is Mark Sneller, PhD, author of Greener, Cleaner Indoor Air, A Guide to Healthier Living. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And my guest is Mark Sneller, PhD, author of Greener, Cleaner Indoor Air. And we're going to be talking about indoor air quality now, how it affects you, and what you can do to improve your indoor air quality. Oh, I should give his website is globalgreenair.com, and you can get his book there. You can also get it by just going to toxicfreetalkradio.com, and there's a description of his show, and you can click right there and order it from amazon.com, which gives a tiny commission to defray the expenses of running this radio show. Anyway, there's so much information in this book. Why don't we just start by talking about, like, what is the scope of how indoor air pollution can affect your health? Because you cover a lot of different things. Like, I focus mostly on toxic chemicals. We don't often talk about mold or dust or those kinds of things. In the definition of toxicology, something is toxic. Even an allergy is considered a toxic exposure. So why don't you just give us a quick overview of the range of illnesses that can come from indoor air exposures and the range of pollutants that are considered indoor air pollutants when you're talking about indoor air quality.
Wow. Okay. There are two basic ways to categorize our problems or indoor problems. One of them is particles, and the other one is gases.
Gases, yes.
Okay. So by particles, that includes dust, carbon exhaust from vehicles and rubber tires, we're talking microscopic respirable stuff that gets down into we call it PM10, 10 microns and below by the federal government, that gets into your deeper lung spaces. And then you have the bacteria, and then you have viruses. Those are all particles. And as a quick aside, the dirtiest area of the home, in my estimation and in my experience, is the refrigerator, for a lot of reasons, and I devote a whole chapter to the refrigerator and why it probably communicates more disease than any other area of the home. That being said, you have the particles that are, most of them are tracked in on shoes. So the dust gets ground, including pesticides, by the way. Most of the pesticides that we find in homes, there may be a half a dozen to a dozen, have never been used in those homes before. They're just tracked in from hither and thither, wherever they're being used, in the gardens, on the lawns, wherever. And they're tracked into the home. They mix with the particles and the dust, and they get into the air, and then they're circulated throughout the home and like that. So, but that's basically your particle factor, and that can be reduced by having a scrub mat outside the door, taking off your shoes at the door, like that, and that will actually reduce lower the dust level within the home. Removal of the dust itself by vacuuming is okay, by slow vacuuming, but at the same time, by instrumentation, I found that the dust level inside of a home goes up a thousandfold once you begin vacuuming. It's an interesting factor.
Wow.
Another instrument that is used is air filtration, and empirically, it would seem that air filtration works because it reduces the level of particles in a room and like that. But we've never been able to prove that it works, because setting up experimentation is virtually impossible to get matched sets of people and that kind of thing. So that's, that one you kind of got to take on faith. The other category is, and I'll get to the symptoms and problems in just a second. The other category is the gases, the volatile organic compounds, the carpet glues in industrial settings, outgassing from paints. And there's acetones and xylenes and various and benzene and those kinds of factors that are in paint that outgas, and they give rise. That's responsible for most of the smells inside of a newer home, rather than the carpet. So the paint, that therefore the home needs to be aired out completely, so that those that VOC level decreases. But the biggest problem that we're running into now is perfumes and fragrances, and you know, your imagination can run riot thinking about the number of perfumes and fragrances that we're exposed to on a daily basis, even if we don't want to. And I even have a chapter we're covered with chemicals section, and then one of them is in the bathroom and getting up in the morning, and I counted 200 plus chemicals that we're exposed to, and perhaps a dozen different fragrance products. And this is just a normal living. Now, the thing is that what we're finding is that, and if I had to expand my book, I would put this in, because now what we've been able to do scientifically is to take a perfume, a fragrance, let's call it a perfume, that has a combination of perhaps half a hundred or 100 ingredients, and run them through a gas analyzer. It's an instrument that tells us what is in there. And the items that are in there, there may be a dozen of them that are carcinogenic that are on the list. And so,
but see, the end result of all of this, I just want to interject here for a second about the perfumes, is that none of this is on the label. All it says is perfume or fragrance. And,
right, because it's proprietary.
No ingredients. It's all proprietary. And yet, I mean, perfume doesn't sound like a carcinogen, but that it's going to cause cancer. But listen to what he just said. What was it? A dozen carcinogens, did you say?
Yeah, up to a dozen, yeah. And you take the plug-in air fresheners, and I analyzed a home just recently, and a man collected antiquities. And he traveled around the world. He had these antiquities within his home. And his housemaid suggested that he have plug-in air fresheners to make everything fine. I come in there. I run air analysis in his home. And I find millions and millions of these little microscopic particles of organic solvents that are in the carpeting, that are in every room of the house, every closet of the house, that originated from the air fresheners. And I told him not to, you know, that he needed to cease and desist because they were going to affect his antiquities. Some people like them fine. The point is not to stop everything. That's not my philosophy. But realize what you're being exposed to and cut back, and to save money. This is really my reason for being and reason for writing this book, is to save people money, save hundreds and hundreds of dollars a year on doctor's visits and the time that you spent at the doctor's office and traveling you won't need medical care if you just take care of yourself at home.
I agree. We need
and
to
I'm
take
serious.
A break. Wait. We need to take a break, and we'll be right back, and we can continue to talk about this. This talks with Free Talk Radio, and I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Mark Sneller, PhD, very enthusiastic about his topic of indoor air. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Mark Sneller, PhD, author of Greener, Cleaner Indoor Air, A Guide to Healthier Living. Well, before the break, we were talking about how many millions of dollars could be saved from people reducing indoor air quality. And that's actually consistent with studies that I've seen that said that something like 70% of, I'm trying to remember the number, 70% of all illness that require medical attention is based on exposure to toxic chemicals, actually. As we go about our daily life, and that it could be $5 billion of savings collectively per year in America if we were to reduce the amount of toxic chemicals in consumer products?
I totally agree with that, and we never did get to the symptoms. I want to touch on, if I may, a couple of items in this segment. In terms of symptoms, the obvious allergy symptoms of sneezing and coughing and itching and watering eyes, and this includes the pets too, of course. But what's interesting is that our exposure to these volatile organic compounds, let's just stick with the gas part right now, results in frequently in headaches, depression, and mood swings. So if you wake up in a lousy mood, it may not be your fault. How's that?
Exactly. I had that experience in my life. Like, I'm a pretty cheerful person. But, you know, I just want to tell a story because it so relates directly to indoor air quality. Many, many years ago, when I was back in my early 20s, I used to be engaged to a man who lived, I lived in Oakland, California at the time, and he lived in Berkeley, California. And in Berkeley, California, and as in probably a lot of cities with old houses, big old houses, there are a lot of big old houses that have been split up into apartments. And so the apartments are not made quite like a regular apartment building would be, because they've been remodeled by various different people. Some are up to code, some are not. And so this apartment where he lived was in a beautiful old house, great architecture, and it had a kerosene heater in it. And it was just one kerosene heater in the living room, and it had open flames in it, like a fireplace. You could see the flames inside the kerosene heater. And we would get along just fine when we were someplace else. But when we were in his apartment, we were depressed. We would argue with each other. It was just like not a good situation at all. We finally broke up. We were engaged to be married, and we finally broke up. And a couple of years later, this was before I knew anything about toxic chemicals, and a couple of years later, I had learned that a lot of what was going on with me was reactions to toxic chemicals, and I was working for a doctor, and this man came to my doctor's office, and he said to me, "I want to tell you that I realized that what was going on with me was exposure to toxic chemicals, and that was what was causing us to fight like that in my apartment." And he said it had
perfect.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many marriages are based on
with you?
Disintegrate from that today.
Yeah. And I mean, he was just so sorry, and he wanted to like talk to me about how he could get the toxic chemicals out of his body and all these things, because he could see the damage that it had done to us.
It's a story that repeats itself on a daily basis in many households. And, you know, the mood swings happen in children. They're very sensitive to these things too. So if you see your child or your spouse having a mood swing for some reason, figure out if they just used a lot of hairspray, or there's a lot of fragrance, or possibly what their last meal consisted of too, or if there's headaches, you might see if there's a incoming storm and there's a drop in barometric pressure. There are a lot of variables there too, but I just wanted to mention that. Now, I would challenge your listeners to the following, to highlight what I'm saying. Take all the products that are underneath your bathroom sink and your kitchen sink and your laundry room, and take them all and put them all into one place and add up the cost on all of those products.
Oh, that's a good idea.
See how many of them have volatile organic compounds in them and petroleum distillates. And now add up the cost of a jar, a bottle of concentrated lemon juice, a gallon of vinegar, baking soda, and borax, and that the latter will cost you $10 and will probably last you half a year.
Yeah.
The former will cost you $200 or $300 and will be gone overnight. And so now you can replace everything with In 90% of the cases, for your laundry detergent, you can use borax, and baking soda you can use for your clothes softener, anti-static, you can use, there's a way to use vinegar for that. Fresh lemons you can use in your showers to remove lime, as well as vinegar, depends on your, and vinegar is a wonderful disinfectant. But it can't be called a pesticide, or bactericide, because it's basically a naturally occurring product. The same thing with borax, like 20-mutein borax. It's a naturally occurring product, so by definition, it can't be called a pesticide. There are other regulations involved in the nomenclature, but these four items, then you can do. You can polish your furniture, sanitize your, and clean your toilets, the sinks, on and on and on, and do your laundry and do your dishes and anything you can be, and sanitize and sterilize your kitchen after you use. You cut up chicken, and so you get the salmonella off of that. You need to use it for your refrigerator and clean up the 10 areas in your refrigerator that are problematic, and especially on the doors and like that. But these four items replace the hundreds of dollars of organic solvents and volatile organic compound producing substances that you have. And as far as personal care products, the hairspray.
We have to go to break again, so let's take okay. personal care products after the break. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and my guest today is Mark Sneller, PhD, and we're talking about indoor air quality. And I want to say, those are exactly the four things I clean my house with. So you must have been reading my books. But they are. Those are the things to use instead of all these toxic chemicals. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And today my guest is Mark Sneller, PhD, author of Greener, Cleaner Indoor Air, A Guide to Healthier Living. And before the break, you wanted to start talking about personal care products. So let's go.
Personal care products, be real careful about them, especially the types that are aerosolized. And again, I'm not saying quit everything cold turkey, but I am saying that use it wisely. If you're going to use a hairspray or some kind of aerosol, make sure it's out above a pump sprayer and not an aerosol can. The latter makes microglobules that travel through the airspace and get circulate throughout the home. So use it sparingly. Keep the fan on if you have one in the bathroom to exhaust that air too. Much of this is really insidious. We're sold a lot of things. We get perfume in the mail. We get we're sprayed with perfume in department stores. Indeed, we use perfume laundry detergent and dryer sheets. Why?
I would like to know why they think that we need to have all that perfume.
Because it's a seller's market. Mm-hmm. And the perfume industry is like the sugar industry. It's like the petroleum industry. It's an industry. And so they're out to sell their product. And so you're going to wash your sheets and pillowcases with this fragrance, and then you're going to sleep in it. Now, it makes no sense. Why?
Because it smells good,
you're going to get a better sleep. It never worked for me. I mean, I got other variables going on when I sleep, and it has nothing to do with fragrances. It's all insidious. It's permeating through our society and our age and the marketing skills and our ease of exposure through television and various marketing plans and ads and like that. And so it behooves us as individuals to wise up and just say, no, I'm not going to buy products with epetroleum distillates. I'm not going to do this and that. I'm just going to stick with some basic products and do a little bit of research if necessary and read your books and read my book. That's going to change lives, and it's going to save a lot of money, not only in terms of purchases, but in terms of expenses, doctor's visits, time, argumentation, depression, headache, better health, better lifestyle, the whole thing, and it's simple to do.
Yes.
That's
so simple. It really is very, very simple. And I remember back more than 30 years ago when I was first faced with this question of, well, where are the chemicals and what do I do? There weren't any books like mine. There weren't any websites like mine. Nobody's done the research that you've done at that particular time. But I figured it out, and now that I've figured it out, it's so easy. It really is so easy. So it's just a matter of deciding that you're going to get the toxic chemicals out of your indoor space and finding out what can you use instead of this that is less toxic, and it really becomes second nature. It really does. And I really find that living this way is actually more pleasurable and enjoyable than living with toxic chemicals. Once you start understanding, there was a point where I felt like in my mind I just wanted to go put a little skull and crossbones on everything that was toxic. And I kind of imagined myself going through the grocery store putting a skull and crossbones on all the toxic foods and all the toxic products. And,
yeah.
You know, I think it would be one day that would be fun to just go into a grocery store and start doing
that. I would just do the same thing to what used to be underneath my sinks and in my laundry room, you know.
Right.
And you take them out and you're amazed at the number of jars and bottles and cans.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't even properly sealed. Some of them are leaking and so on and so forth. The kitchen is the worst room of the home for particles. The laundry room is probably the worst room of the home for VOCs. That and the master bathroom. Because the master bathroom has, of course, your fragrances and perfumes. Everything's perfumed in the bathroom. And then in the laundry room, everything's perfumed. And so the highest concentration, I've got different machines and devices that measure VOC levels, volatile organic compounds. The laundry room is typically has the highest VOC level in the home.
Yeah.
It's a confined space. There's no air ventilation, usually, you know, other than, say, through the dryer. But that really doesn't count for air escaping from the air proper. So you have then the VOCs there, and you're standing there, and you're working there, and your exposure there. Don't buy perfume detergent. Matter of fact, you don't even need to buy commercial detergent. What Borax does, 20 Mule Team Borax, if we want to mention a name, but what that does is it boric acid ties up the hard water in the washing machine, and so it takes out the hardness of the water and allows the detergent, a small amount of detergent, if you will, half as much as you usually use, maybe even less than it, to actually penetrate now. And it won't bind up with the calcium and the magnesium and the lime. It goes directly to the clothes and cleans it thoroughly. And then in the rinse cycle, you throw in some baking soda, which is an odor remover par excellence, and you're set.
Yep.
And, you know, you've used a cheap product to tie up the hard water, and then you use less soap. And to get to the detergent, because you don't need as much, and you got clean clothes, and you're good to go.
See, saving money all around. We only actually have just about 5 minutes left of the show. Didn't that go by fast? Amazingly fast. And you mentioned the refrigerator before. Tell us more about that.
Well, we talked about the surfaces, the handles, the sides. You know, those need to be done, wiped down on a regular basis. Cold and flu are transmitted, we're believing now, through contact more than through sneezing for a lot of reasons. And so contacting a surface, shopping carts, railing in the supermarkets, at home, the refrigerator handle, microwave handle, and then sticking your fingers in your orifices, in your nose, in your mouth. I mean, we, you know, as humans, we do this. And, you know, we should cease and desist that habit. And so that's how the bacteria and the viruses are transmitted. Now, aside, of course, from salmonella, that's a little different story. All right, inside the refrigerator, check the seals, behind the seals. If it's green, chances are it's going to be a mold called cladosporium that eats seals, and it can become airborne, and it's allergenic. It's a naturally occurring mold, but it loves those seals, and it loves their ventilation systems. The vegetable tray needs to be cleaned out. Matter of fact, take everything out of the refrigerator, open up your jars, the cans, and see what's spoiled and rotten. Throw it out right then and there. When you move the refrigerator, you'll find things that you lost before, and you got to clean that out, make sure your fan is clean. On top of the refrigerator, it's usually sitting near the stove, so it's going to be full of grease. That's got to be cleaned off, too. And go through the unit and clean it up. Clean up the floor underneath it. Clean up the walls behind it, and like that, and throw out the bad food. And there are a number of things to look for that I talk about in the book. So that one is when I really started exploring the refrigerator I said, well, what could be wrong with a refrigerator? Come on. I think the list was at 10 and it's still counting. I'm finding new discoveries on it as far as the refrigerator is concerned. So the surfaces are really important. And cleaning surfaces, you can use vinegar, dilute chlorine bleach, like a 1 to 10 is fine. Vinegar works just as well to remove the salmonella out of the sinks, out of the surfaces. And again, it is a very powerful bactericide and viricide, but it can't be advertised as such. So it's just word of mouth that helps to spread, and it's white distilled vinegar that we would normally use to remove stains. There we go.
And, you can buy vinegar in, like, gallon-sized jugs. You don't have to buy a bunch of little bottles of vinegar. And I have, like, probably 3 or 4 gallons of it sitting under my kitchen sink right now. You can just go to some, discount warehouse kind of store where they sell things in bulk and stuff and get. I mean, even at the supermarket, I think you can buy a gallon.
I think I just paid $2.50 or something like that for a gallon.
Yeah, it's
of
very
white distilled vinegar. You can't buy enough of it. It's for cleaning. I mean, it just, the list is in. Matter of fact, I ran across a book in the store the other day that they had over 1,000 uses for vinegar and 100 uses
like
for baking soda.
Yeah.
It's endless.
It is. I mean, if you just have vinegar and baking soda, you can do anything with it. I remember my very first book. Even before my first published book, my first self-published book, a friend of mine was just glancing through it, and he said, the name of this book should be You Can Do Anything with Baking Soda, because that was the first book that I wrote about this.
Yeah, unclogged drains.
It's just a simple, simple thing. And if you have vinegar and baking soda in your house, you can do almost anything. So, what a treat this has been to have you here today. It's
thank you. Global Green Air. I have to promote that new website. And we'll find out about the book, globalgreenair.com, and read your newsletter, listen to your radio show. And this has really been an honor and a pleasure to be with you today.
Thank you. And I hope you'll come back, because there's so much information we can talk about in your book. You've been listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindat. Go to toxicfreetalkradio.com to find out more, and I'll be back tomorrow.